This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. Joining us on the show today from the National Post, Michael Trakos is going to join us to talk about the contract extension that was handed down to Randy Carlyle, Toronto Maple Leafs head coach. Also joining us on the show from our sister station in Montreal, Amanda Stein is going to join us to talk about the Bruins and the Habs Game 5 tonight in that series. And then, of course, the final guest today from ESPNChicago.com to talk about the Wild Blackhawks series, Scott Powers is going to join us. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets, NHL, Stanley Cup playoff news, pretty much everything in the hockey world is IllegalCurve.com. I say good morning to my colleagues, Richard and Ezra. Gentlemen, good morning. Good to see you on this fine, warm Saturday morning as it finally seems to have cracked through to tolerable temperatures here in this fair city.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, although I looked at the forecast for the rest of the week and it doesn't look so good, but we got our shorts on aside from Ezzy.
Yeah.
But
Ezzy's not much of a shorts guy in the best of times.
That's true, actually, Ezzy. You aren't a shorts guy.
You're a jeans guy.
I don't have a good pair of shorts right now. You know, you have like one or two good pairs of shorts. Right now, I don't even have that. I think my shorts shrunk. You know, you don't want to have those shorts
I don't think it was the shorts that shrunk, Ezzy. I think it was something else that expanded.
Well, that's true. But I didn't get taller. But you know, you have those one or two pairs of shorts that those are like your good shorts. I don't even have that, so I don't even have the option. But it definitely makes driving into the studio on Saturday mornings better when it's already hot in the morning and you know it's going to be sunny. And Richie, as far as the rest of the forecast, you just can't look at the forecast. You have to just focus on today because we've had the worst winter ever, and it seems like it just rains all the time now. Like, when did Winnipeg become Vancouver? Anyways, as far as the weather goes, that is.
We'll get into a climate change discussion on our weather-related show. That'll be, I think, 4 a.m. on TSN 6, I think, is when that show is going to be on.
We'll check out the Doppler radar and the Sky Tracker weather. We'll get Matt Leibel on here. It'll be great.
Yeah, there you go. Anyways, let's get into last night's games in the NHL. Two games in the Stanley Cup playoffs. The New York Rangers staved off elimination in Game 5 with a really strong performance, defeating the Pittsburgh Penguins 5-1. Probably the strongest performance we've seen from the Rangers since maybe Game 1 of the first round series against the Philadelphia Flyers. You could see the emotion that was going on there. And then the other game last night, the so-called late game, would have been in Minnesota, where the Wild defeated the Chicago Blackhawks 4-2, evening that series at two games apiece. And let's start with that series first, as we talk about last night. I mean, if you thought, you know, you looked at that game last night, and I watched most of that game, and, you know, the second period had a ton of goals, and none of them were very good goals. But then in the third period, I mean, Ilya Bryzgalov, really, the turning point to me is that breakaway save on Patrick Sharp that Bryzgalov stood up for.
That is a turning point, and Ezzy's going to get on me because he likes Bryzgalov and the acquisition. I think Bryzgalov's terrible. But hey, he played really well yesterday. Great save on the breakaway on Patrick Sharp. And I personally believe that the Chicago Blackhawks haven't really taken the Minnesota Wild especially seriously in this second round. They dispatched them quite easily last year. The Wild went through a tough 7-game series against the Avalanche, and I think that the Hawks beat a better team in St. Louis in 6 games. They went 4 in a row. I think the Hawks know they're better than Minnesota, and they are better than Minnesota, and they're playing like they know they're better, and that's always trouble. Because in reality, they won the first 2 games, and they won them based on big-time skill plays, as far as I'm concerned, but they didn't play especially well. So the Blackhawks have cruised kind of into a 2-2 series. Now, luckily for them, they're talented enough that it's 2-2, and they're not down 3-1. But they seem to play their best. This team plays its best when desperate, right, guys? Even think about it going back to last year. When did the Blackhawks really turn it on?
When they were down on the verge of being eliminated by the Red Wings in the first
3-1
round.
3-1 to the Red Wings. You know, Taves going nuts in the box. Seabrook coming to calm him down. They turn it around, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they play their best, then they go cruise through after that. It's not easy, but they cruise through. This year, they go down 2-0 to the Blues. They really turn it on, and they win 4-2. And I realize that they lost the first two games in St. Louis in overtime, but they come on. So now what's happening is they're desperate again. Well, they're going to get desperate. And I assume they're going to play a lot better. But this is what we're getting to. I mean, the Minnesota Wild are going to play a defensively stifling game. I don't like the way they play. I find it boring. I don't find it conducive to the players that they have on the roster. But at the same time, it's successful for them right now. And, you know, I just find that the style of play to be particularly boring.
Very formulaic.
And I don't think the game needs to be played that way. I think coaches play that way to keep their jobs. I think Mike Yeo, who's a guy who's been coaching for his job on and off all year, you know, as Michael Russo's pointed out in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, I think he coaches for his job, and I think he plays a little bit more of a safe style. And I realize with Briz Gallo in the back, they have to protect their goaltender a little bit more, etc. But that really hasn't changed in terms of their style all year. So give him credit, because both times, I mean, if you look at their home and away records, and as I get in here in 1 second, the home and away records, Minnesota at home in the playoffs is an entirely different team.
Sure.
Well, they're unrecognizable when they're on the road, and at home, they're a dominant squad. So
5-0 at home so far in these playoffs, and I think something in their six road games that they've played, I think they've given up something like 24 goals in those six games. I mean, goals against average of 4 goals a game on the road, and you're right, they're a completely different team at home versus on the road. And, I mean, you got to, you know, give props to the crowd in St. Paul. They're certainly with them, but you know, as he'll let you touch on this, it's almost like the Wild are lulling their opponents into submission. They're just so dull that it's, you know, you sort of almost turn your switch off by default when you're playing against them.
Well, I think there's a few things here. I think you can't ignore the fact that the Minnesota Wild have been a completely different team at the XL Energy Center versus on the road, either in Colorado or in this series in Chicago. Richie mentioned desperation, and this team is desperate. They were absolutely destroyed in the first two games, outscored 3-1 with the Chicago Blackhawks. And to me, this is a team that simply outplayed the Chicago Blackhawks both ends of the ice. I thought that was Chicago's worst game of the playoffs, and that includes the first round. They weren't hitting. They weren't skating. Patrick Sharp and Marian Hossa were the only two players that I thought really had good games. I didn't think Taves, Kane were really a factor. I didn't think it was the best effort defensively. You also can't ignore the fact that Corey Crawford led in a couple of bad goals, including Justin Fontaine's goal was pretty weak. And I know it really probably killed the Colorado Avalanche, and Tyson Barrie watching that game, seeing Matt Cook be a big factor on that goal. Unfortunately, he was, but Corey Crawford didn't play very well. And the Chicago Blackhawks, as Richie mentioned, they might have taken the team a little bit lightly going back to Minnesota with the 2-0 lead. But the Minnesota Wild, we've seen this time and time again. This is a pretty good hockey team. You look at the guys that are not the stars of this team, Charlie Coyle and Nino Niederreiter.
Yeah, good players.
You know, combining on that last Minnesota goal. And this is a team that has a lot of talent, a lot of speed, a lot of youth.
Absolutely, I agree with all that, Ezzy, and that's why I like them to play open and up and more. The thing you said about Niederreiter, you mentioned him. Seeing the progression of Niederreiter from his Islanders days, and that includes NHL Islanders and the Bridgeport AHL team, and now he is far more engaged physically than he was years ago. And he's turned into a forechecking presence, and then his skill yesterday, you know, when he comes down the wing, he's scoring. It's a different player. And I want to give the coaching staff in Minnesota credit in that respect, because they put him down to the bottom depth lines to engage him in the game physically. He did that, give him credit for doing that, and now he's able to, you know, succeed offensively. So I want to give that credit. Coyle, I mean, a nice touch pass yesterday on the third goal. He's a talented player. I mean, a guy that Michael Russo came on this show and said, you know, maybe a little bit better on the wing than at center this year. But in the future, obviously, that Brent Burns trade, he was the key for the Wild. So there's pieces. I mean, you talk about it. And then you got Molson. I mean, obviously, there's injury issues with him. Pominville, Parise. You have skill and you have speed. And quickly, as he just mentioned it, but Matt Cook.
Here you go. Starting it off early.
And, you know, okay, let me go for a second. He made a nice play on the first goal. I mean, as he mentioned it, he contributed to it. He made a pass. On the forecheck, he made a pass, went to the net.
The question is, should he even be playing at all?
He shouldn't even be anywhere near the series. That guy should be out for the playoffs. It's a joke that he's playing. And then he comes in there again and gets points yesterday and contributes to goals yesterday and plays a good game. I mean, that line played a good game. and that's a joke. I think it's absolutely the NHL once again proving that you can kind of do what you want out there.
Hey, Richie, I think you're not the only one that feels that way. I think there are a lot of people out there. As we mentioned earlier, I think the Colorado Avalanche and Tyson Berry in particular, even though, you know, it was said that Matt Cook reached out to Tyson Berry, I don't think that matters. I think you're watching that and you're seeing a guy who you're out of the playoffs and you're seeing a guy who's now back in the lineup contributing to a team that has a chance to go to the third round.
That's right.
And
Matt Cook also tried to fight Don Cherry. Just point that out.
Expand on that? I missed that one, I got to tell you.
That was like 2 years ago when Cherry called him out for one of his hits and he confronted Cherry in the... You ever heard that, Coach's Corner?
No, I think I missed that one.
So you're saying he tried to fight an 80-year-old man?
Yeah. Got in confrontation with him. We should play that clip if we can pull it up. It's from years ago in Hockey Night Canada, but I'm not sure if we can find it. Okay. Anyhow.
That would be a worthwhile pick clip to at least listen to.
Tyson Berry, I mean, if Tyson Berry doesn't get hurt, they're probably in the second round anyways. But that's another story. The Minnesota has played well, and I agree with both of you in terms of this, the talent element, as he points out, and the element of kind of lulling Chicago to sleep. That's one of the things, you know, aside from Cook, does anybody on that team really aggravate you?
It's not like the
Rangers, sort of. They're just sort of there.
Yeah.
It's not an overly physical team. I mean, they have players that can lay the body, but for the most part, it's a team that plays in their defensive style,
yes.
Very structured, extremely structured. Might be the most structured team in the league, with maybe the exception of LA or a few other teams. Yeah. Might be the most structured. And they wait for turnovers and they capitalize on their opportunities. How many times, guys, in these playoffs have we seen the Minnesota Wild come back when the game is tied or they're down a goal and score in bunches? This team can score goals.
Yeah.
It's just, as Richie mentioned, the system is not conducive to scoring in bunches.
It's, you know, they sort of... Yeah, they hold back, and then on home ice, they occasionally unleash, but when they're on the road, and I mean, that's, you know, when they're on the road, they just don't seem to be able to do anything. They're a different team entirely.
Which is weird because the style of play you think would be successful on the road would be the simple style,
sure,
and a complicated style at home, and so it's the opposite.
That's right. It is a little bit bizarre. Like, they play this dull style at home, dull but effective at home, but on the road...
Ineffective.
Yeah, pardon me. Dull but ineffective. No.
I just finished your... I kind of finished your thought. You said effective at home, and I was going to say ineffective on the road.
Oh, yes. If this was the game of Mad Libs, you would win there. Congratulations.
Right. And again, Drew, what's the series going to come down to now? It's a best of three, and if you don't win a game on the road, you don't win
the series.
So.
Yeah, that's the key.
But when you get to Game 7, if they are able to get to Game 7...
But what I say is when you get to Game 7, Chicago actually turns it on.
Sure, because Chicago ultimately is a far better team than Minnesota is.
Yes.
And you would think that they're going to... The switch that we talked about where Minnesota has lulled them into flipping it off... They can flip it back on when they need to.
And we talk about, we mentioned Taves there, but like, guy like Keith, the guy who played a tremendous first round, not playing very well right now.
He had a bad game yesterday.
Yeah, not playing that great right now. But I mean, those guys are great players. Great players make great plays. And don't get me wrong, I mean, Ryan Suter on the other side there. But the Blackhawks look a little bit bored to me. And I gotta be honest, the whole second round's been pretty boring.
Yeah.
So I don't blame them that much, but I mean, they're in the series and they need to turn it on. And I think getting their home crowd behind them, and that's a great home crowd, you guys know that, 21,000, 22,000 raucous crowd there, they're gonna be okay, I think, but at least it makes it interesting here. Now, for the Blackhawks' perspective, quickly, you want to win the cup. I mean, everybody wants to win the cup, but your expectations are higher than other teams, right? The Blackhawks need to win the cup this year to have a successful season. The Wild do not.
Right. The Wild have already had a successful season.
Exactly. So the Blackhawks, with it looking like the Kings are going to get through, and I think the Blackhawks' speed will be too much for the Kings, although the Ducks have certainly played well here.
Ducks have been the better team in two of the three games.
I mean, yeah, but Jonathan Quick doesn't matter if you're the better team. And I wouldn't be shocked if John Gibson, but we'll talk about that later.
We'll talk about that series coming up.
But if you look at it, you don't want to go to seven here because you just went through six with St. Louis and they beat each other up.
Mm-hmm.
You go to seven with Minnesota and you come and play a physical LA team. Maybe you do beat LA. Maybe you win. Maybe you do beat LA. But then that Eastern Conference, there's a bit of a cakewalk over there. It's going to be tougher to play that team in the finals. So if you want to close it down quick. And I realize that, as you mentioned, Minnesota not that physical,
right.
Not that big. Still, you want to limit the amount of games, and one game is a big difference.
They always say that to win the cup, you need one short series. And if you look at, and now I define short series as four or five games.
Yep.
Nobody in the West has had that. Whereas in the East, both Montreal and Boston had that short series in the first round. So, you know, we'll see if that, you know, actually bears itself out as the playoffs go on. But it's something worth noting for, because I think Chicago, when they were up 2-0 heading to Minnesota in two games that they pretty much dominated, they thought this is going to be our easy series.
One big difference from past years is going to be the fact that LA and Anaheim have no travel.
None. You're right. You're right. And not that Chicago and Minnesota is
usually get killed on travel.
But you're right. They usually do get killed on travel, and they haven't gone anywhere. LA hasn't left the state in 3 weeks.
And the Rangers have flown three times.
Yeah, well, you play Philly and then you play Pittsburgh. It's also very easy.
Three times in 3 weeks.
Let's head to break. We're going to come back. We'll talk about probably the most entertaining series in the second round so far. That's Boston-Montreal. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Now battles Erickson along the boards for it. Erickson to the point. Boychuk fires, kicked out by Price. That'll bounce on the side of the net. Scramble in front. Price down. It's free. They score. Frazier in his first playoff game jams it home for his first playoff goal. And the series is tied at 2, heading back to Boston.
John Bartlett from TSN 690 with the call.
He's good, by the way.
He's great.
I like him.
I listened to the third period of the last Saturday's game. So that was what? Game 2. I was in the car for the third period.
That was game 2, yeah.
Yeah, and a game you could
listened in the car too.
Yeah, a game you guys were driving out to, you know, as he was your witness.
I watched the game in a TV in my car.
Oh, okay. That's cuz you had your driver driving you, and you know, as he drives, you know, you have a limo that shuttles you around town. Anyway, John Bartlett.
Yeah, but the only thing is I'm passed out drunk in the back seat.
TSN, our sister station in Montreal, TSN 690 with the call. The Bruins winning game 4 in overtime, tying the series up at 2. Game 5 tonight. Game you can hear live, of course, on TSN 1290, as we've been bringing you coverage of the entire Bruins-Habs series.
Can we agree that was the best game of the playoffs so far? I mean, that game was incredible. Back and forth. To me, that had the feeling of the next goal wins, sudden death, overtime, almost 10 or 15 minutes into the game, towards the end of the first, early second. Tuukka Rask and Carey Price are going shot for shot. And I don't think... I mean, they have some technical differences in their games.
We built kind of just the joke for you going shot for shot later tonight.
We just looked at each other. And we're waiting.
I guess I can't make fun of my inebriation and then not set myself up for a joke.
That's right.
But back to Carey Price and Tuukka Rask, they're playing so well. They're playing at such a high level. Mm-hmm. As far as I'm concerned, those are the two best goalies in the NHL. I'd probably even give the advantage to Carey Price. I know Lundqvist is a good goalie, and there's some other good goalies too, but that was an absolute treat to watch because each team was getting chances in that game, but it's not like either team was playing poor defensively. And I think at times, Richie, in this series, you've seen guys like Torrey Krug and Dougie Hamilton as young defensemen struggle with the speed and the size with certain players on the Habs, Rene Bork and Vanek being two of them, but for the most part, we know the Habs are a small team. But that game and this series has just been incredible. And, you know, we know this team has played hundreds of times, really. I don't know the stat. It's a lot. 4 of the last 7 years they've played. And it's just a treat to watch. And it's hard for me to really say right now who has the upper hand, because I think it's going to come down to another couple overtime games.
You could very well be right. It's a best of three. Mm-hmm. Richie, let me ask you this question. A lot of talk in the last day or so, last couple days, about the lack of production from Pacioretty, Desharnais, and Vanek. Mm-hmm. Can the Habs win if those guys don't get going?
Well, they can win because Price and Subban have been otherworldly. But they likely won't win without those guys going. And, I mean, Boston, too, hasn't got their big boys going either.
Krejci, what does he have? One goal?
So, I mean, if you look at it from that perspective, well, if they get going and Boston's guys get going, that's going to be an offset in any event, right? So, Montreal, the problem is, you know, Vanek, when he's not performing, this is the difference between Boston's top guys, in my opinion, and Montreal's top guys, is that when Boston's top guys aren't going, they're doing different things to help you win. You know, if Bergeron's not scoring, for example, he's doing so many different things to help you win.
Well, he's locking you down in the defensive zone.
Faceoffs, all that stuff. Yeah. If Vanek's not scoring, he's not doing anything. It's not good defensively. It's not overly physical. So he has to score to produce. And Pacioretty, a little bit different, but at the same point, he needs to score to help you win. And I think that's the biggest difference for this team. Now, Montreal let Boston off that game 4. I mean, I know it's a tough goal. It was a lucky goal, all that stuff. But they let him off the hook there. And it's going to be tough now to steal this, because I think it's an even series. But obviously, you go down, I don't need to state the obvious, the 3-1-2-2 difference. But Montreal being able to take that game at home, and then obviously just needing to win one of the next three. Now you're going back. Boston feels like we haven't... This is what Boston feels like as far as I'm concerned. We haven't played our best, and we're tied 2-2, and we got home ice advantage. So they know that they have to crack Carey Price, and they know, and they, which they did in game two, and they know that they have to limit PK Subban and obviously the Habs' speed and monitor that. But I think they're feeling pretty good. I think the Habs feel pretty good, too, of where they're at, but they don't feel as confident as the Bruins do. But it is very much a speed physical, a speed versus physicality game. And I find it interesting, you know, they talk about speed, speed, speed. You know, I was watching a bit of the NFL draft, and they were talking about how teams are doing spread offenses and speed, yet the two best teams of the NFC
are just physical beating each other up,
the Niners and the Seahawks, right? Mm-hmm. And it's similar kind of this thing, you know, like LA, Boston, while you hear about speed and the game being so fast, in the NHL, still a lot of these good teams are just the biggest, strongest teams. So I find that interesting, and I find it interesting this series in terms of monitoring who is successful, because you're looking at speed, you're looking at high talent on both sides, but you're looking at speed against bigger and stronger. One thing though, Ezzy, is Chara. Chara needs to be better, and if Chara doesn't play, doesn't step up his game, maybe Boston beats Montreal. Maybe Boston beats the winner of the Rangers Pittsburgh series, because neither of those teams scare me too much. But Boston isn't beating one of the Western teams if Chara and those guys don't get going on the back end.
And I know Chara was a Norris Trophy candidate this year. I actually thought that one of either the Ryans, Ryan Suter or Ryan McDonough, should have got the nod over him. That's another conversation.
I agree with you, by the way.
The point is that Zdeno Chara is still an elite defenseman. He's not as dominant as he used to be, though. He can still play a lot of minutes. He doesn't play as many minutes as he used to. Claude Julien, in the previous years, 2011 versus the Vancouver Canucks, the year they beat the Vancouver Canucks in the finals, sometimes he would play him literally 32-35 minutes a game. He doesn't do that anymore. He's had adjustments to make with Dougie Hamilton, and I think Dougie Hamilton has really grown in his second full year in the NHL, even though he does have struggles at times when to make reads and decision-making and all that. But for the most part, he's an excellent young defenseman who has a bright future. Switching over, though, to me, in this series, what has really been the key, you know, Drew mentioned the kill line, Krejci, Iginla, Lucic. To me, almost one of the big difference makers in this series has been the physicality of the Montreal defense. And when they're able to get Markov and Emelin out there, let alone with P.K. Subban and Josh Georges, those guys aren't given enough credit. You talk about P.K. Subban and Andrei Markov and all their offensive prowess. Those are four good defensive defensemen. Georges seems to block everything that you shoot at him. And same goes for Emelin, who had the injury, and Richie really likes Emelin, and we talked about how big of an impact he was going to have. This Montreal Canadiens team is good in every position. Mm-hmm. You're always talking about Boston, how they're good at every position. Yep, they're absolutely the best 5-on-5 team, and they are. They deserve that. Montreal's not that far behind. Montreal is in these games, and they are dominating these games at times. So it's not like there's one or two players. And if you think about it, you know, you mentioned Pacioretty, you mentioned Desharnais, Vanek, Iginla, Krejci. All these guys haven't lit it up, but still, these teams are playing at a high level, and they're scoring. And for the Montreal Canadiens, they're really winning the series, even though it's tied. I'd say Montreal, to me, has been actually the better team in the series. And I think, Drew, you were saying that at the top of the segment. But really, if you want to find maybe a reason for one team to have the advantage over the other, it would have to be the ability of those game breakers to get going. And to me, Krejci, Iginla, and Lucic, they've had their chances. They've had some chances. Carey Price is just playing so well that so it's not like they're absent out there or they're invisible out there. I think, to me, that line gets going. That's going to cause the Montreal Canadiens some problems. But again, as far as the Montreal Canadiens go, you get that Pacioretty line going. Pacioretty's a 40-goal scorer, so Montreal, if he gets going, that's also a difference.
Nothing. I mean, look, Montreal is not the least bit intimidated playing against Boston.
They never really have been.
No. I'm not. I agree. But
this
a lot of other teams
had in mind in terms of, you know, these rivalries.
Sure, of course. Well, I mean, Boston Montreal, they could play. I mean, nobody would ever get bored of watching Boston Montreal play.
No. Yeah, if you're not getting up for if you didn't get up for that game four in Montreal with how loud it is there, and then it goes back to Boston strong and all that. If you don't get up for that, you're not a hockey fan.
You're not a sports fan.
That's the best second round series by far.
It hasn't even been close. The other series have been. I mean, they've been dull.
The Rangers, Pittsburgh, nah. The Chicago, Minnesota, blah. I mean, LA, Anaheim's been good.
Yeah, LA, Anaheim's been was
quality of hockey good.
So you
but
can
I mean,
stay up for the games.
Well, yeah. That's the problem. Is there? You know, yeah. That does. You know, that is a factor. I believe. I mean, people don't notice it.
Absolutely, I agree with that.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about that Rangers Pittsburgh series. Rangers big win last night in Pittsburgh. We'll see if they can keep it going on Sunday for Game 6. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
We knew they were going to be hungry, and like I said, we didn't even come close to matching the desperation that we needed. So, you know, that's something that we have to be much better in.
They came out flying, like I said, throughout the box.
Penguins captain Sidney Crosby lamenting an opportunity lost last night as the Penguins on home ice simply laid an egg against the New York Rangers, falling by a 5-1 margin, and the Rangers claw back a little bit closer to tying up that series, now trail 3-2 with Game 6 going Sunday night back in Madison Square Garden in New York City. You know, I thought the after... I'm trying not to be crass here because, I mean, what Marty St. Louis went through is obviously tragic, losing his mom prior to Game 5 last night, and obviously this being Mother's Day weekend and everything else. But I did think that the Rangers played a better game and got a bit of an emotional bounce back, probably in the whole win one for your teammates concept.
Yeah, I think that's accurate, Drew. I mean, it's unfortunate that it had to be that way, that had to happen. You know, that happened, and that was the reason for some of their motivation. It's completely unfortunate, and I'm telling you that Marty St. Louis would rather lose in three and have his mom than win in seven and not have her. But everybody knows that. But they did play an emotionally spirited game last night, and you could see it throughout. I thought they supported it. First off, let's give... not that anybody else wouldn't have done it, but if you saw Sidney Crosby on the broadcast, yes, go up to St. Louis beforehand, a classy guy.
Sidney Crosby, was nice to see.
Sidney Crosby is just the epitome of class. I mean, for the attention he gets and the way he plays the game and the way he carries himself, people don't give him enough attention.
I thought Drew was the epitome of class.
Epitome of crass.
Crass, more likely.
But, yeah, I thought the Rangers played a spirited game. They were by far the better team, and they're going to be dangerous now going back home on Sunday. A crowd that turned on them is certainly
deservingly so.
Deservingly so, but a crowd that's happy to take them back and cheer them on right away, sure. And a loud team and a tough place to play, and you know, it was a nice emotional victory yesterday for the Rangers. And if you're Pittsburgh, and it's tough to play against that yesterday, if you're Pittsburgh, but Pittsburgh again, I mean, I know they're winning 3-2, and the Crosby Malkin combination has been pretty dominant, but. And neither of these teams are saying to me, oh, you know, Stanley Cup. And they're close to, one of them's going to go to the conference finals. And sure. And I just have to say, I mean, maybe it's a product of the salary cap. I don't know what it is, and I think it is partly that. There's a lot of mediocre, I mean, if you read Larry Brooks in the New York Post, he'll tell you first-round series Rangers-Philly, and we noted it as well, was average hockey. And I mean,
and we were expecting a lot out of that series.
Absolutely. And this
series,
too. You're
expecting emotion, at least.
This series, too, has been pretty average hockey. I mean, the Rangers don't engage you. Pittsburgh hasn't really done that much. Like, there's no hate in this series.
None.
How do you get into it? Yesterday there was obviously an unfortunate storyline, but how do you get into this series when it doesn't seem like the teams even hate each other?
And as Glenn Healy on CBC has said, you got to embrace the hate when it comes to playoffs.
You
Richie,
do.
I think you make a good point here. As far as the on-ice play goes here, the Rangers, in games 2 through 4, scored 2 goals. They were shut out twice. We know that.
And I know they had a tough schedule with the travel.
But they were shut out.
Sorry,
they were
not
shut
travel,
out
but
twice.
The games.
Their schedule was abhorrent.
Okay, but yeah, I mean,
game 4, give me a break and get out of the excuse box.
Okay, game 4 was just a bad game. But the first 3 games was a silly schedule.
The first game was not a silly schedule. They played 7 games in the first round.
Fine.
They shouldn't get any more time off.
That's
it
fine.
Was games 2 and 3.
Right.
That was tough.
But you also got to say 6 and 7 in the previous round were also back-to-back, which was the only back-to-back situation in the entire first round.
Yeah, but isn't the main reason why...
I know there's no travel and everything else. I get all that. But it was back-to-back, and it was the only back-to-back.
Well, MSG, I'm assuming MSG was booked every night.
Well, of course. I mean, that's what always happens in New York.
Right, and there were it was a freak, you know, coincidence. There was a concert. I forget what the concert was. There was some concert conflict. Anyways, I mean, that's in the past. Right now, we're heading into game six. But as far as the Rangers go, you score two goals in three games. Your season's on the line.
That's right.
They're down 3-1. Of course they had to come out with that desperate effort. And of course they were inspired by Marty St. Louis. That's horrible news.
Yes.
And no one wants to deal with that ever. Especially when you're in the middle of a tough playoff series and you're trying to come from behind. But they played really well. And again, we saw Richie mentioned kind of the up and down play of both of these teams. The Pittsburgh Penguins, again, and that's not on Marc-Andre Fleury. I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury has been great in the series. Again, the defense is having problems. Robert Bertuzzo and Rob Scuderi are having all types of problems. And right now, guys...
Well, they're both not very good.
Right, and that's kind of the issue with these teams. They have depth issues. I would say the Rangers more so on forward. They have lack of strength, and they have really lack of game breakers. Marty St. Louis and Rick Nash have not really turned it up. The guys that are carrying the team right now... Offensively, Derek Brassard, Matt Zuccarello.
I
mean, you're talking about smaller third line guys. Chris Kreider got a really nice goal. I mean, you're talking about secondary guys that are leading
the
team.
But they've been their best line, as Vino said, since probably January. When you look at the Rangers on a long-term basis in terms of star power, obviously St. Louis is not going to play in the league for three, 4 more years. Maybe two, three.
Right,
not more than
what does he have, 2 years left on his contract?
I think it's one, and then
he'll extend, obviously. But, I mean, if you look at... On a long-term basis, Rick Nash, the money he makes, again, noted in the New York Post, Larry Brooks saying, if you're trading him, you're not getting fair value because the money he gets paid is more than he's worth.
Rick Nash is a goal scorer, and in 12 games, he does not have a goal. And sure, he contributes. He's got 5 assists, and they put him out on the power play. That's another thing, too, Richie, that you can't forget about this game. They had not scored a power play goal since game 2 of the Philly series, and they scored 2. So if that's
you're paying Brad Richards to be that guy, and you got to buy him out likely.
Everything went wrong for Pittsburgh yesterday. You got to stay out of the penalty box because even though you know that they don't have a dangerous power play, and the Rangers have had a horrible power play, you don't give them any edge. The Pittsburgh Penguins allowed them to get back in that series. Mm-hmm. Now they have to go back to the Madison Square Garden.
And what's happened? The power play was good yesterday. Ryan McDonough has got going now, finally. He didn't have a point through the first 9 games of the playoffs.
He didn't have a point, but he's still been excellent defensively.
Well, I don't know, has he? I don't think he has been.
I think that, well...
That's been the surprising part to me.
I think he has.
His high standards, he has not been that good.
Maybe excellent is too much of a compliment, but I think that he's still been... The top pair, and he's still been consistently good for the New York Rangers to me. And I think people, let's not forget, Ryan McDonough this year was his breakout offensive year. He's not a 60-point defenseman. I don't think I was expecting him to score 6 points a series. I don't know if you guys were, but I think, you know, McDonough and then you go back to the second pair of Anton Strahlman and Mark Stahl who have been excellent.
That has been a big key to their success in this playoffs, as you're exactly right about that. Strahlman is making himself a lot of money right now. Pending UFA.
So you're saying he's going to make it rain?
Making 1.7 right now. And he's been maybe their steadiest defenseman in the playoffs so far.
Yeah. He hasn't been flashy.
Now, playing with Mark Stahl. This is what happened with Mark Stahl. Mark Stahl is a great junior, great player. Came up, excelled as a youngster. Remember that was, I believe, the lottery where it was all the teams, all 30-1, and the Rangers lucked out. I think it was a 10 or 11 or 12. Stahl fell there. He just does his job. And what's happened is he had the eye injury, and his game took a downturn. He just wasn't as good, guys. I mean, he had to get comfortable with the fact he wasn't seeing as well, all those things. Now he's confident again. And they have him under contract for 3.9, which is such a bargain. Saylor's done a great job with the contracts on the back end. How much, just if you talk off the top of your head, and I'm sure you might know this, but how much does Ryan McDonough make?
$4.7 million.
At the top of your head, you're looking at the computer screen.
I'm looking at CapGeek.
Yeah, and you look at...
it's called doing research and having your stuff available.
You know how many years left he has in his deal? 5, guys. Yeah.
I think we've just been doing this show for so long that Drew knows what Richard's going to ask.
Yeah.
So Drew goes on his computer and looks up CapGeek.
But Glenn Saylor and Jeff Gordon, his assistant general manager, they've done a great job. But you look at Mark Stahl, back to that point, he's back to where he was before, maybe even better. And that gives them that has allowed the team. I think McDonough and Girardi, as they still play well because they're so good, haven't played as well as I think they can. Although last night, you know, McDonough really coming out party. Stahl and Strahlman have picked up the slack a little bit, and that's a great top four. And that takes off the pressure off your Kleins and your Moores and guys like that. So it's a good defense there. Obviously Lundqvist. You have Lundqvist and that. But back to the point about the forwards. I mean, you're paying Nash and Richards a combined $14.4 million. And They're doing nothing out there.
Yeah. Richards hasn't been as bad as Nash. Richards, at least you noticed him a little bit more in the first round.
Yeah, again.
But I mean,
in this series,
first round he would succeed more because Philly doesn't skate very well.
I think he only has 1 or 2 points in this round. It's all been... He had a good series against the Flyers, but right now when you need him the most, he has to be a leader. And, you know, we're talking about a guy who, even though we all disagreed with this last year, he was being a healthy scratch, benched, essentially.
Yeah, he embarrassed
by John Tortorella, which a guy who's won the Conn Smythe should never be benched like that.
He's got 2 points in the series. He's got a goal and an assist in the series.
Right. And for him and the role they expect him to play, that's not good enough.
Yeah.
And to me, and we mentioned this, you mentioned Alain Vigneault even said this, other players like Zuccarello and Brassard are leading this team right now.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the guys that are out there. You know, we saw Brassard's game one overtime winning goal. Those are the guys right now that are scoring those goals. Is that going to be enough against the Penguins when the Crosby-Kunitz-Malkin line is going and they're getting production from other lines? I think the Rangers are still in trouble in this series.
Look, you're down. The Penguins are going to have 3 games in which to eliminate the Rangers. So you're definitely in trouble. But you're going back to Madison Square Garden. You're on home ice. I mean, you know, not unreasonable to expect New York to win on Mother's Day on home ice.
Where's the third game?
The third game
it's game six.
I know, but Game 5 was the first opportunity to eliminate them. Game 6 and then Game 7. They'll have 3 elimination games they'll have to win.
Okay.
Now,
but Game 7, back in Pittsburgh.
Rangers, so I'm going to stick with that, but I mean, it's always scary when you got Crosby on the other side because he can win a game by himself.
And Lundqvist can certainly, I mean, Henrik Lundqvist can go into Pittsburgh if it's a Game 7 in shut the door.
But if you're looking at, you know, from a simple perspective, you're looking at, will the best players be the best players for them to win? Now, you could argue the Rangers' best players have been Brassard and Zuccarello since, you know, mid-season.
Sure.
But they're not close to the high-end level of Malkin Crosby. Right. Huh. And Nash and Richards just haven't performed at an elite level.
We talked about this 2 weeks ago, right after the first round started, I guess a little bit through the first round. And to me, and this has not been verified or confirmed by anybody, but I'm starting to believe that there is something wrong with Crosby, or not starting to believe, there has to be something wrong, because from game to game, depending on the situation, just the way Crosby's game is played, yesterday again, he had trouble defensively, and there were periods of the game where he just didn't have that energy level that you expect out of Crosby. So, again, if that continues to be a story in this series, they're going to be in trouble, because Malkin might have scored that beautiful goal last night. I don't know how he scored from that angle. But he's not the only guy you can't win with one guy scoring all your goals. It's just not going to work like that.
You're right. I have no argument there.
I mean, at a more macro level, both of these teams aren't that good. And personally, I just don't think they're that good. Teams. I know certain players are superstars. I don't think either of these teams are that good.
When you compare them to the Boston-Montreal series, when you compare this series, the goaltending, and I know Marc-Andre Fleury has had a couple shutouts in the series, so I'm not taking anything away from him. But when you talk about just the overall play in that series and the way the two teams are playing as teams, I agree with Richie. I think Pittsburgh or New York is going to have a lot of trouble with either Montreal or Boston, because those two teams are playing at a higher level and they're playing better as a team. They're rolling out their four lines. Can you really say that the fourth lines of the Rangers and Pittsburgh are playing like the fourth lines of the Bruins or the Habs? I mean, when the way Dale Weiss is playing, Briere, Bournivel, I mean, it's going to be tough to beat either of those teams.
You're absolutely right. And putting on my forecasting hat, If it's Penguins and Habs in the conference final, Sidney Crosby playing games at the Bell Center would be just absolutely fantastic to watch, because you know that's a place where he always seems to play his best. Montreal.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's great if Montreal is in the conference finals, because it's Canada gets more engaged in the playoffs. Not that they aren't if they're not there, but they're more engaged if they are there.
How about this? If Montreal gets through, well, Montreal or Boston, and then the Rangers get through, that'll be 3 original 6 series in a row.
Yeah.
If Chicago gets in, that'll be every single round it's had an original 6 series. To me, I don't know when the last time that happened, but I don't think it's happened in a long time. 4 rounds in a row, I should say, where you have original 6 teams meeting.
Yeah.
I mean, history's repeating itself, baby.
Game 6 of the Rangers and the Penguins goes tomorrow night. And then we'll see if they can make that turn. The Rangers can win on home ice to make it a Game 7 elimination.
By the way, you got Habs and Bruins tonight at 6.
Yes.
And then you got Kings-Ducks after that.
That's right.
Did anybody realize last week That they started the game at 11:30 for Habs Bruins, and the race for the Kentucky Derby wasn't until 5:30?
Yeah, well, they do 2 hours of a pregame horse race show.
On what?
Calm down. Let's go to break.
What do they talk about on
for,
a pregame
horse show? For 2 hours. Like,
show.
Bob Costas sitting there, like, petting the horse.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
The one thing that sticks out in our minds is that there was a level of compete, and there was a level of success this group was able to achieve for a certain period of time, but then it seems that we weren't able to get the team back on the rail. And those are the things that confuse us, because we feel that this group can continue to grow into a higher level of hockey club.
Still, the Toronto Maple Leafs head coach, Randy Carlyle, talking about the last month collapse that the Leafs experienced that saw them go from firmly in a playoff spot to not qualifying for the playoffs. Carlyle gets awarded a contract extension. It's a one-year extension plus a one-year club option.
So it's two more years than the club option, if I recall.
Don't we have a club option with Drew? Like, if we want, we can club him?
Yes, exactly. That's why you carry a golf club at all times, so you can hit me with it. How surprised are you that Randy Carlyle is coming back as the Toronto Maple Leafs head coach? We'll talk about this more with Michael Trakos at the top of the hour, but how surprised are you that he's back as head coach?
I'm surprised. I don't think it's a bad move, although it seems like everybody on the internet does.
Do we have time for a fourth rant in the course of an hour?
It's only the first hour, Drew. Got up early today, though. I don't think it's a bad move. I think at some point you have to stop. And I realize they had Ron Wilson there for a while. But at some point you have to stop firing coaches and start putting the blame on the players. And all you're going to hear about is Randy Carlyle's team is using a formula that doesn't work and isn't sustainable and all that stuff. At the end of the day, Randy Carlyle wants to win, and he has to play with the players that are given to him. And maybe the only way he felt he could win with the players that were given to him was to employ that style of play. Of course, Randy Carlyle wants to have longer periods of time of pressure down the cycle in the offensive zone. He's been given a team of kind of skill players, a mishmash of talent. People have a love affair for Jake Gardner. I'm not so sure why, but they have a love affair for Jake Gardner. People have a love affair for Nazem Kadri. I mean, to be honest, I'm not so sure why either. I mean, both of the players have a skill set, but they're talked about as if they're future greats in Toronto, and I just don't see it. I think at some point the players have to bear the responsibility of their collapse, and it's not always the coach's fault. It's not always the coach who leads a team to victory. It's not always a coach who should be responsible for defeat. I think a coach has a part in that. But I like the move. And at the end of the day, there are other factors to take into account. Brendan Shanahan probably didn't think right now that there were that many good alternative coaching options. Brendan Shanahan probably thinks it's easier to get rid of Dave Nonis and Randy Carlyle in one fell swoop if the team isn't successful. Brendan Shanahan may very well be keeping his eye on Mike Babcock and his contract situation in Detroit. So there are a lot of factors here. But at the end of the day, Randy Carlyle didn't forget how to coach. I mean, he coached obviously here in Winnipeg. He coached in Washington. He coached in Anaheim. He coached now in Toronto. And the guy knows the game. Like, one of the things that always bothers me, and I've coached before too, one of the things that always bothers me is, people say, oh, this team isn't doing that. You're assuming, and I think wrongfully you're assuming, that Randy Carlyle doesn't know that. He doesn't know. Like, what you point out, what the fan points out at home about the team and the Toronto Maple Leafs, do you not think Randy Carlyle, who's been around the game for 40 years, you don't think he knows that? He knows that. Maybe he's tried different ways to get his team going and then it hasn't worked. Is it Randy Carlyle's fault? It may be. It very well could be. Is it the player's fault? It very well could be as well. So it's hard to nail down exactly a reason for the lack of success. But I don't think it just falls on the coach's shoulders. And another thing is the continuity factor. How long has he been there, guys?
3 years.
Okay, hold on. He was there at the end of the season, 2 years ago, for the last 20 games?
Yep.
He coached 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
a half a season, 48 games. So that wasn't even a full season combined.
Right.
And then this season, you're going to come a new coach and a new system, getting to know the players again and all that stuff. How many more times are you going to do that?
Well, before you, I mean, like you mentioned, the truth is this isn't a, I mean, this team isn't that good. People seem to have these wonderful expectations of a team that, I mean, it's got Phil Kessel and he's a dynamic offensive player.
To that point, the team isn't that good. Do you ever hear them get credit? It's always about, you know, they're gonna fall down and their numbers aren't gonna sustain. Blah blah blah. Okay, whatever. I understand that. I understand that argument. Don't get me wrong, but they're gonna pull the rug from beneath them. And they're gonna fall and they're gonna choke. Well, the year before, people say, oh, what happened if it was longer than 48 games? I mean, you don't know that. You can make all the assumptions you want. But the point is, what about the fact that Carlisle had a flawed team in the first round last year, lost in Game 7, and then this year in a playoff spot until the collapse? So, I mean, nobody looks at it from that perspective.
Well, I mean, the truth is, I mean, to that point, I think the Toronto Maple Leafs last year probably ended the season where they should have. They were never as good as they were for the first 60-some-odd games. Mm-hmm. And were they, you know, missing the playoffs? They probably weren't a playoff team.
If they had some of their guys like Bolin, those guys for the whole year, I think in that conference they should have been a playoff team.
Fine. But they didn't have Bolin for the whole year. They played, I think, like 3 games at the end of it all or whatever. Yeah. It was more than that, obviously. Yeah. But you look at this roster, and it's a flawed roster. Now, and he's done a pretty good job with a flawed roster.
Now, Michael Tracos is going to come on. He doesn't, you know, I know his position on it. He is not a big Randy Carlisle fan. I think most of the guys in the media there aren't.
You mentioned they're a flawed team. This is still a pretty good hockey team. You look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, they're in third place. And we've documented this throughout the regular season. Throughout the end of the regular season. This was a team that was in a position to have a home playoff date, and they have a lot of talent up front.
Their defense is terrible.
Yeah. The problem with this team has been their inability to move the puck out of their own zone, and they have a lot of young defensemen that are put into roles that they don't have the experience to fulfill.
Great point.
Morgan Rielly, Jake Gardner, Paul Ranger came back, had problems. I mean, we've talked about this again and again and again. Dion Phaneuf had an awful year. The goaltending wasn't as good as they expected it to be. James Reimer had a rough year. Then Randy Carlisle essentially said that James Reimer was only going to play when Jonathan Bernier was tired or injured, and that created a problem. James Reimer lost confidence. Mm-hmm. You had all these problems happening, and I think up front, they absolutely do have a lot of talent. I've said this time and time again. The Van Riemsdyk, Kessel, and Bozak line, that is a legitimate and excellent top line. Then you get down to the second line and Kadri and Luppel, and they have consistency issues. I mean, there are holes on this team.
How good's Luppel?
But it's probably evident to Dave Nonis now that he has to go out and he has to sign a veteran defenseman that can make this core better.
Yeah, and there aren't many of them available.
And that was obvious at the trade deadline. He did nothing. And I think it really was a sign that he did nothing, and then the team won lost 12 of their last 14 games. That slide, I mean, this is a playoff team. I know that I don't think they were in a position to contend for the Stanley Cup. Don't get me wrong, but I definitely think this is a decent enough team to make the playoffs. Now, sure, there are holes, and I think Richie said he's surprised. I wasn't surprised because, you know, Richie mentioned Randy Carlisle didn't forget how to coach. Not only did he not forget how to coach, he didn't forget how to be a good coach. So the thing is, like, you look at the team and the problems that this team had, and sure, as Richie mentioned, every aspect of an organization has to take credit for it. The guy that's on the front lines, the players, the GM upstairs, and Shanahan obviously came in and he said, well, is moving Randy Carlisle, what is that going to say to this team that we're starting over now?
Quick question, right before we go to break and we bring in Michael Tracos to talk more about this.
Yeah.
By firing his assistant coaches, the guys he's been with for his entire career for the most part.
Now, Scott Gordon, those guys were holdovers from Ron Wilson, but lots of his guys, Farish, were there before.
Yeah, Farish and all those guys. Are they setting up to fail?
Partially. I think that's the case. I don't understand. If you're going to lean on a guy, you want to lean on a guy with at least some of his friends along with him because he feels a certain comfort level. But, you know, Randy Carlisle has the toughest days of his career to deal with that, and we'll ask Michael Tracos about it. But I find it to be odd. If you're going to go in with a guy, I always wonder why you fire assistants. You know, it's like when they fired Perry Pern when Jacques Martin was coaching Montreal. It's just a sign of you might be on your way out.
Right. You're saying when they fired Martin at the end of the year or whenever it was. Mm-hmm. It was just the beginning
near
of the end.
The end of the year.
Yeah, it was death by a thousand paper cuts at that point in time. Let's head to break. When we come back, Michael Trakos of the National Post to talk more about the Leafs extending Randy Carlyle. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Online, TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest NHL, Winnipeg Jets, and Stanley Cup playoff news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend from the National Post, Michael Trakos. Michael, good morning. Thanks very much for doing this.
Hey, good morning, guys. No problem, man. It's been too long. I always say that. Every time we talk, it seems like it's gone way too long until we actually talk again, but it's great to be on again.
Well, we're pleased to have you on with us, of course, and we brought you on to Carlyle. Randy Carlyle, head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, gets a 1 year contract extension along with a 1 year club option. Why do you think the team decided to bring him back as head coach?
I think there are two reasons. One, I don't think Dave Nonis was set on the fact that Randy Carlyle is completely to blame for what happened this year. And two, and maybe this is the more important reason, looking around, I don't think they saw the options where there was someone out there that was better than Randy Carlyle. And maybe if San Jose had fired Todd McLellan, or Detroit had allowed maybe Toronto to steal Mike Babcock away, maybe Randy Carlyle doesn't come back. But with what's out there right now, I don't think that they saw a better alternative. And that being said, I think Randy's on an extremely short leash heading into next season. He's got to win games, but more than that, he's got to win games maybe the right way, so to speak. Can't be doing it by relying on a goaltender and Phil Kessel for most of the night.
Michael, how much does this, the details of the contract come out, kind of as you alluded to, and this club option that the team has? What does this contract really look like?
I think it looks very much like the contract that Randy was basically on right now, where it's, I think we're going to look at it as he's on a year-to-year basis. There's a bit more job security just because he gets a two-year extension, but like you said, one after the first year, it's basically a club option for the next. So coaches are different than players. You're not really locked into a guy, and especially with the Toronto Maple Leafs and how deep their pockets are, I don't think it matters a whole lot if they fire a guy and they're still paying them and they have to get another guy for another couple million. So the fact that Randy Carlyle's got a bit more job security, I don't think it changes the fact that the team would go in another direction if he's not getting the job done.
Michael, you touched on this a little bit, but do you think the decision to keep Randy Carlyle as the head coach was more so to do with having the continuity of the same coach as opposed to changing the coach yet again? Or was it, again, that they had really no candidates that they thought were going to be better than Randy Carlyle?
Yeah, the continuity is an interesting one because Randy's only coached 148 games in Toronto. And before that, basically, if you're Phil Kessel and the Leafs had hired a new coach, that's four coaches in, I think, 4 or 5 years that he'd be on right now. Like, since the lockout, they've had Pat Quinn, Paul Maurice, Ron Wilson, and Randy Carlyle. And I think if you look at successful teams, whether it's Detroit or San Jose, even Chicago right now with Joel Quenneville, the thing that makes them successful is doesn't matter who's coming in as a free agent or who's getting called up from the minors, but everyone kind of knows what to expect of the coach. But if you're going from Ron Wilson, who was playing a completely different style than Randy Carlyle, and then going to another coach, well, it's going to take some getting used to. And I think as much as Randy is to blame for the team not playing a sound defensive system or not getting on the right page, I think you still got to give him a little bit more time, or at least maybe this is the least thinking, is that give him a little bit more time, get the right personnel in place, and let's see what he can do, because he does have a track record in Anaheim making it work and getting the team to play with a certain identity, and just haven't seen a whole lot of that in Toronto so far.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online tsn1290.ca. We're talking with Michael Trakos of the National Post about the Randy Carlyle contract extension in Toronto. Michael, it's sort of hard, it's sort of strange to be talking about the next head coach when you've just given your current head coach a contract extension, but how much does this contract extension sort of line up with the possibility of Mike Babcock becoming the head coach if Randy Carlyle is to flop in the current stint as head coach?
Yeah, I think that's still maybe a pipe dream for a lot of Leaf fans, or maybe even Brandon Shanahan to a degree, is the fact that Mike Babcock is still operating without a contract after 2014-15. But I think it's very similar to Leaf fans kind of looking at the free agents who might be coming up, and whether it was a Steven Stamkos or a Ryan Getzlaf and Corey Perry, and going, well, they're on their final year of a contract. Or look at Joe Thornton, he's on the final year of his contract. And then it quickly vanishes because teams don't really let it get to that point. And we'll see if Mike Babcock gets to that point where he's looking for a different home other than Detroit. I think that's probably going to depend on what the Red Wings do this offseason and how competitive of a team they are. But if I'm Mike Babcock, I'm not leaving the Red Wings to go to the Leafs. Last time I checked, the Leafs were in the playoffs and the Red Wings were. So, and then they had how many injuries? So I think it's just one of those things that I think in Toronto, a lot of us do. We think that the next big thing wants to re-sign or wants to sign in Toronto, where we quickly forget how good of a home they already have there.
Michael, and you look at, you know, keeping Carlyle, we have to obviously note the fact that all of his assistants have been fired, and Dave Farish, a close friend of his, he said it's been, you know, Carlyle admitted it's one of the hardest days in his hockey career, having to, you know, stay on as coach and not have his good friend there. Why keep Carlyle on? And I realize some of those coaches were with Ron Wilson before, so they weren't all his guys necessarily, but why keep him on and not let him pick his assistants, or at least keep ones that he wants around?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting summer for Randy and Dave Farish, who I think they have cottages, like, literally next door to each other. Mm-hmm.
Well, so
one will be the stern, one will be the bow, and we'll just, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, but like you mentioned, Dave Groen and Scott Gordon were guys that Randy inherited, and were two guys that actually Ron Wilson didn't even want. He had them thrust upon him by Brian Burke at the time, because he said, okay, we're not going to fire you, but we're going to fire your assistant. So same kind of deal is happening to Randy. And well, we'll see what this actually does, because I think we forget how influential assistant coaches can be. And you've seen a bunch of assistants, whether it's Ottawa's coach, can't remember his name.
Jacques Martin?
No, the current Ottawa Senators coach.
Well, Paul McLean.
Paul McLean, yeah. So there's a lot of successful head coaches who were assistant coaches. And so maybe this is a chance for if Brendan Shanahan really wants Randy Carlyle to kind of get with the times, so to speak, and rely more on analytics and whatnot. Maybe you get some more modern thinkers in there, guys who are really willing to think outside the box, and it helps Randy change a lot of his methodology. In the same way, the team's penalty kill was just atrocious, and has really been atrocious since the lockout. So maybe you get a guy in there that can really fix that, and we'll see what kind of impact it makes. But it would be interesting to see if Randy actually gets to choose, or how much of a say he gets in bringing his assistants, or if they're literally just like three guys that are thrust on him.
The perception is that, you know, Carlyle may be behind the times. But Michael, do you think that is true, or do you think that's blown out of proportion?
I think it's a bit blown out of proportion. It's not like he's a guy that had been out of the league for three or four years and then all of a sudden is coming in. It's not like Pat Quinn just getting a head coaching job out of the blue now and going, well, when's the last time he's coached in the NHL? Like, he hasn't been out of the league since he's been in the league as a head coach. So the idea that the game's passed him by, it was like, well, he's kind of been in the game. He's seen the evolution happen as he's been coaching. So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And the fact that you're going, well, he won a cup 7 years ago, and a lot of things have changed in 7 years. Well, he's only been out of the playoffs twice during that span, really, when you look at the year that he was fired in Anaheim and then this past season. So what he's doing is successful. Like, he was able to get a Leafs team that wasn't expected to contend for a playoff spot in the shortened lockout season he got them to fifth spot in the conference. So he did something right, and a lot of people don't agree with the way he does things with having enforcers on the fourth line and not really rolling fourth lines to a degree. But if he can get the Leafs playing with a certain sort of identity and playing a cycling down low game, maybe he can get this team to kind of overachieve again.
Doesn't he, I mean, at some point, Michael, and he needs to also have players to have be able to play on the fourth line.
No question. And he needs player. He needs defensemen.
Forget about
the fourth line. I know a lot of people, and myself included, keep harping on this idea that he didn't roll fourth lines. But like, even a successful team is only going to play their fourth line, 10 minutes or maybe under. But the bigger thing for me is Dave Nonis has got to get some defensemen here. You've got Dion Phaneuf, and then you've got a bunch of guys who are probably third-pairing defensemen on most quality teams, and a couple of young guys who might grow into top pairing defensemen, but right now are still a bit green. So his number one priority, is he's got to get some guys in the back end, and I think that'll really change how this team looks. And whether that means you got to trade Joffrey Lupul or even think about trading James Van Riemsdyk or some other key components of the forwards roster there. Something has to be done to really strengthen the back end.
Michael, we touched on the assistants earlier. Any idea who the new assistants are going to be? Have you heard any names floating around?
Yeah, you know what? I'll be honest. I haven't heard anything. I haven't really been thinking too hard on that as to who the assistants might be. It could be guys that Shanahan is sort of familiar with. I've heard Chris Draper's name mentioned real early on when Shanahan was hired, but I'm not even going to wager a guess as to who they might be. Typically, even when Leafs hired Scott Gordon and Greg Cronin, I had no idea who Greg Cronin was when he was hired. I think typically assistants tend to float under the radar unless they're guys like a Tom Rennie or a Jacques Martin who used to be head coaches and now are willing to take a bit of a demotion to be an assistant on a team.
Final question for you, Michael. Based on this extension now and Shanahan being in the picture, are Nonis and Carlisle a package deal?
Oh, that's a good question, actually. I never thought of it as a package deal, but yeah, quite possibly. Like I said, so much responsibility and so much onus is going to be on Dave Nonis this summer in terms of improving a roster. And if that doesn't work, and if Randy somehow doesn't come up and is able to change the outlook of this team, then yeah, for sure. I could see both guys going and Shanahan kind of wiping the slate clean. But right now they've been given a bit of extra time to kind of turn things around, and Shanahan is not making any kind of knee-jerk reactions. But time will tell as to how this team operates, and if it doesn't, I think he's going to clean house, basically.
Michael Tracos covers the Toronto Maple Leafs for the National Post. He's a frequent guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Michael, thanks very much for doing this.
Anytime, guys.
We'll see you soon. Thanks very much, Michael.
Thanks a lot, Michael.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Lovejoy to center. Plays it to Cagliano in the zone. They get it to Lovejoy with a shot. He scores! Ben Lovejoy. A quick two-on-one with Cagliano, and Lovejoy put it in the upper right corner. The Ducks defenseman has given Anaheim a 3-1 lead here in Game 3 with 2:55 left to play.
Audio from Game 3 of the Ducks-Kings series, courtesy of KTLK, as the Anaheim Ducks fought back to get into the series after trailing 2-0. They made it 2-1 in the series with that 3-2 victory over the Los Angeles Kings. You know, the Ducks are down 2-1, but this is a series that really they should be up 2-1 in, given how they, you know, Jonathan Quick simply stole Game 1 away from them. You know, again, this has been a good series, but nobody's really paying any attention to it, I think largely because of the West Coast aspect of it.
I've been paying attention to it.
Most people. Sorry, it's been going under the radar, as the West Coast series often do, mm-hmm. is they fly under the radar because of the late games and, you know, the East Coast bias, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, the Los Angeles Kings are up 2-1, but they certainly haven't been the better of the two teams in the three games, I would say.
This has been a fantastic series so far, and maybe not as good as the previous round series. We all know the epic collapse of the San Jose Sharks, but this series has been pretty good so far, and to me, these two teams are playing a lot more disciplined. You only saw three power plays last game. Anaheim scored twice on the power play, both of their opportunities, and Corey Perry, if he puts that empty netter in, Mike Richards doesn't have the chance to come back and make it a one-goal game. There wasn't enough time left for the LA Kings, but I thought, you know, it was really impressive to me the way the Ducks responded. Timu got that big goal on that two-on-one with Nick Bonino. And, you know, the Ducks right now, guys, and we talked about it a little bit in the first hour of the show, with injuries to Matthew Perreault, and then you've got Frederik Andersen injured. You've got Matt Beleski who's injured. That's seriously going to affect their depth. And I know guys like Devontae Smith-Pelly and Emerson Edom, who's actually sent back to the AHL. But these guys, they have the opportunity to plug in guys that have some ability. But you're talking about guys that have been with the team and guys that have been in the league. Matthew Perreault, we know he's been in the league with Wild Washington. He's actually played pretty well there for the Anaheim Ducks. The Anaheim Ducks right now, I think, are in a good position, but they have to settle their goaltending thing. They have to decide if they're going to go with Jonas Hiller, because Frederik Andersen didn't look good. Well, Frederik Andersen's looked shaky,
and he's injured, so he's not going to be an option.
And he's injured, which is unfortunate. But in that game, if you watch that game, he wasn't looking as strong, because Jonas Hiller had to come in the previous round. And as Richie mentioned, I know he wants to get in here. John Gibson is a guy that for Norfolk has been figuratively, standing on his head against the ice caps. I mean, this guy's the real deal. John Gibson is the future goalie, I believe, for the Anaheim Ducks.
Well, I mean, that's obvious. Yeah. Obvious, you're right. Future goalie might be tomorrow.
Oh, well, tonight.
Tonight, well, it might not tonight, but it might be on Monday.
I bet you they go with Gibson tonight.
If you go with Gibson tonight, then he's your goalie. And I don't know if I said it on air or not, but I wouldn't be surprised. I wasn't going to be surprised if they relied on him in this series in some form. I think that he's that good.
Hiller
from
came
what I hear,
in,
I don't know. I've only seen him play once, but
Hiller came in and he stopped 7 of 8 shots. But Hiller has had problems all year. After the Olympics, after Sochi, he wasn't the same goalie, and that's when Frederik Andersen took over. And took over the number one role. But if you start with John Gibson, you got to stay with John Gibson.
Yeah, if you're up 2-1, you go Hiller and you give him a chance. If you're down 2-1, well, I mean, if you're up 2-1, you can go Hiller and still go to Gibson. If you're down 2-1, you can't go to Hiller. I mean, you can still do it. But, I mean, you're done with Hiller's. I mean, we know Hiller's done there anyways. So that's the question, I guess, is because I think if you're up 2-1, you can give a game to Hiller, and then if he's done, you go to Gibson and ride it out. But if you're down 2-1 like they are, and you go to Hiller, then you're putting Gibson in a must-win game. It's a lot more pressure. Not to say you can't handle the pressure, and I know Hiller's done there regardless. So if you're factoring that in as well, then might as well just go to Gibson all the way here.
I think you go to Gibson. I mean,
I'm not saying you don't go to him. I would go to him too, Drew.
Yeah.
But I don't know what you think, yes.
It's Gibson or bust. If you go to Gibson tonight, it's Gibson or bust. But has Hiller shown you enough that makes you feel the team will play that confidently in front of him?
Well, if you go to Gibson, you said it's Gibson or bust, then you stick with John Gibson. You don't. You can't do this in the second round. Yeah. You can't flip goalies from one series to the other. We've seen that time and time again where that creates issues, because then a goalie doesn't get into the routine, and then you start having confidence issues. Look, and these guys have been in pressure situations before, but you don't want to do that when there's this much at stake. The Anaheim Ducks, they go down 3-1 to L.A., the chances of you coming back are statistically low. And I know that the LA Kings came back on the Sharks, but to win 3 games in a row, especially when you have a road game to win, because Anaheim has the home ice advantage, of course, in the series, but you can't have a situation where Gibson goes in, he lets in 2 or 3 goals, and then you pull him. To me, that's the concern. But the way John Gibson has been playing, and I haven't seen any of the games, I've only been listening to them on the radio against the Ice Caps, from all accounts, he's been playing lights out in the AHL, and we've seen him. I saw him in the World Juniors. That's when I saw John Gibson.
He played the end of the season too,
and he was excellent. He was excellent. I believe that team won gold. By the way, that he played on,
I believe.
Maybe
we'll
check that.
I think he played for the U.S. At the World Hockey Championships last year as well.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, this isn't a guy who's coming in completely raw. He's got the pedigree. He's never played in the pressure cooker that is the Stanley Cup.
The
playoffs.
Most important part of us. Forget all that. I mean, AHL playoffs important, but he's played in the NHL before.
Sure,
that's what's most important.
Yeah. And if you look at this series, and whether or not they start him, Richie, John Gibson, that is, if he struggles, and we know LA can explode offensively, we know when Kopitar's going and, mm-hmm. and other players are scoring, especially when you get that secondary scoring, Gibson might come in. And if that happens, same situation. If the LA Kings go up 3-1 on the Ducks, you got to stick with Gibson for game five. So he's going to be a factor. John Gibson isn't just coming in. This isn't Jeff Zatkov on the Pittsburgh Penguins.
That's true.
I mean, this is a guy that they have no problem putting him in. No offense to Jeff Zatkov, but I mean, John Gibson is the future goaltender of the Ducks. And I think what Richie mentioned, you know, is a valid point. When you know that he's going to be the goaltender next year for your team, not number one, but one of two with Anderson.
He might be number one.
He might be number one. It's a good point. You have to make that decision and stick with that decision. And I think Bruce Boudreau's had that problem. And that wasn't just in the first round against the Stars. Yeah. That was in the regular season. And Frederik Andersen, guys, just came out of nowhere. I mean, this is a guy from Denmark who they signed, and then they got rid of Faust because he was playing awful. So, I mean, you got to stick with the guy. It's too late in the game for this wishy-washy flip-flopping of goalies.
Yeah, and they've already kind of dismissed Hiller as the answer by picking Andersen, and then, you know, I mean, that's, to me, was the difference right there.
Sure.
And he's a UFA. He doesn't have a contract, so he's not the guy. They would have signed him by now if they wanted to keep him, and they didn't think maybe they could trade him at the deadline, but you realize now he hasn't played well. And if you look at Anaheim, they've dictated the pace a lot of this series with their forecheck and with their speed, and you know, the Ben Lovejoy goal that we heard coming into the segment, I mean, a beautiful goal by Lovejoy, a great ability to go from defense to offense and create. And, you know, you argue they should be up 2-1,
sure,
at least. And goaltending is a huge factor here, guys, because you have Jonathan Quick on one side. That's why it's really, you know, we're focusing here on goaltending, because goaltending, you look at Jonathan Quick.
That's why it's a 2-1 LA
that's
lead
why, yeah.
after game one. I mean, simply.
John Gibson is the future of U.S. goaltending, and Jonathan Quick is the now
yeah.
of USA
goaltending. And he'll be the now of USA goaltending probably for the next decade. But John Gibson will, I mean, if everything, based on his pedigree and everything else, should be there as, you know, for a lot of the future with Quick.
I've seen Gibson play a game, and it's, you know, it's not a lot to see him. It's not a lot of games. Obviously, it's one game, so it's not a lot of time to see him play. But very impressive, very calm, plays a very calm style and a confident style. And you know what? We've seen it before with young goaltenders like Patrick Waugh. And different guys who just get on. Even Fleury, when he went on, you know, he was a number one pick, and he got on a streak, and he had played more, obviously, than Gibson. But we've seen guys just go on streaks. So if you're going to go, you just got to go with
it. Well, the reason why I think you go with Gibson is you know what the ceiling and the floor is for Hiller. And the ceiling is not going to be good enough to beat Jonathan Quick in a seven-game series. Now, you know, you don't yet know what the ceiling is for Gibson. Is he going to be as good as Jonathan Quick? No, because Jonathan Quick's one probably the top three goaltenders in the world mm-hmm, right now. Mm-hmm. But if his ceiling is better than Hiller's, and he's not going to give up the bad goal, and he's going to do everything you expect of a goaltender in the playoffs, and the team can feed off that in front of him, knowing that they have somebody in the net who's got their back and who's going to do everything that he's supposed to do, I think that's why you go with him. Because you go with Hiller, I just don't think that it matters. I mean, you go with Hiller for this game, and he gives up a bad goal, or he just plays average, you're gonna lose the series because you're down 3-1.
It's also, you know, you look at the factor of, okay, so if they put in Hiller tonight and they lose, they put in Gibson 3-1. On one hand, you have a guy who there's nothing to lose because they could run the table and he could be a hero.
Right.
But you're also putting a guy in basically in his first real meaningful action. You're putting him in to a must-win game. Say he gets just bombed and has to spend the summer thinking about the fact, and maybe that goes back to the AHL, but the point is maybe he spends the summer thinking about the fact that, oh, maybe I can't play here. I don't think that's what would happen, but the idea is you're playing with the guy's confidence there too if you're putting him in only a must-win game. That's another factor to take into account.
And as we know, this decision that Bruce Boudreau has to make ultimately comes down to who's going to win this game for me. You can talk all you want about ceiling, but they're down 2-1. What goalie gives me a better chance to win? You pick the guy. If it's Gibson, you take Gibson. If it's Hiller, you take Hiller. So
I agree. Mean,
you
and
can
I
talk.
Think
you
Gibson.
Can talk about all the future all you want.
I think it's Gibson.
But Gibson is a guy, based on the way he's played for Norfolk in the AHL, and as you mentioned, Richie, he does have some NHL experience. If he gives you a better chance, this is a must-win. As far as I'm concerned, LA goes up 3-1, series over.
I'll tell you who's the happiest about John Gibson being up with the Anaheim Ducks.
The Ice Caps.
Is the St. John's Ice Caps, because that's now a series that they should win. Because Norfolk was the eighth seed in the entering the playoffs. The Ice Caps are the highest remaining seed in the Eastern Conference in the AHL playoffs. So Gibson was the only one keeping the Norfolk in it in game one. They should win that series now.
Drew, that's why you're great, because you always come as you are.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Amanda Stein from our TSN affiliate in Montreal to talk about the Bruins and the Habs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.